Welcome to Anchored and Alive, seasonal nervous system support for women who are ready to stop forcing growth and start living in rhythm with their own energy. I'm Blaze, and each week we explore emotional steadiness, burnout recovery, boundaries, and self-trust in ways that honor the season that you're actually living in. Here, we choose soothing, sustainable growth without the hustle, hype, or self-abandonment. Let's anchor in and come alive. Okay, everybody. Welcome back. I wanted to record a bonus episode for you guys this week, and I'm going to be joined by Liz Moyer Benferhat to explore the question of what it means to be not only with your own life and your own stuff and what's going on with you, but also holding our awareness and the pain of what's going on in the world right now. Because I think as we're moving into the autumn season in particular, a lot of us are finding that we're slowing down. We're starting to reflect on everything that's happened in the year, not just with us personally, but just in the world. And I find as a woman and just a person, a human on this planet, there's so much going on that if we tap into that, it can sometimes feel really overwhelming. I was so happy to meet Liz because she works with this particular issue and helps people to understand what's going on when we're feeling that kind of weight and ways to carry it that I find really complement and are somewhat different from how I handle everyday pains and the way that we go through finding ease in our lives on a day-to-day and moment-by-moment basis. So welcome to Liz. I'd love for you to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what's going on with you, and we can talk about all this stuff.
Thank you so much. It is such a pleasure to be here. And like I was saying before we hit record, we had met briefly, and coming into this conversation, I was feeling such a sense of comfort and resonance just with you and with your community, and really grateful to be having this conversation today.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh my goodness. It's interesting. I find that as conversations like this come up, sometimes like your own life gives you a direction to go in and to discuss. And as we're recording this, I'm coming in after a week of traveling down to visit my brother's memorial bench that his friends put up. So I have a lot of my own personal grief that I'm resonating with right now, and you can hear it in my voice. And when I'm touching into that in moments like that, it is very easy for me to tip into what feels like the bleakness of the world and society and the climate and everything else. And I don't feel like those two things are separate. It feels so intertwined. And I'm really curious, Liz, like how you approach topics like that, or when people are feeling like their own stuff, then it either amplifies or mingles with. I don't know how to describe it really well. Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I want to just honor your brother's presence here with us too, and even you sharing that. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
No, I think you're absolutely right that there is a really interesting relationship and dynamic between emotions more generally. I think of emotions a lot of times as water, right? The archetype of water, even the metaphor of water, and how if you can think to times being in the car with it raining and just your window being covered in raindrops, and how the raindrops can, you know, slide and glide and also morph and merge with each other. You know, separate raindrops can easily become this larger thing. Emotions very much work like this too, right? They're very shape-shifty. They're very wild in that way, but I use that word in the most beautiful sense, right? The most beautiful sense. And I just appreciate you naming at the outset here that for so many of us, it's not just the everyday stress. It's not just burnout from life and our jobs. We are also carrying and in tune with a larger weight related to the times that we live in, related to the world at large, and related to this more intimate, up close and personal relationship that we have with it all. Even for those of us. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, no. No, I think I love the metaphor of the water on the windshield. And as you were describing it too, I was thinking, you know, water It does. It morphs, it changes shape, but it also picks up what's around it and it moves
Yes.
it. And sometimes we're carrying it longer than we intended to, or we didn't even know we're picking up stuff along the
Yeah.
way. And that
Yeah.
really resonated with me. Particularly, we were driving through crazy thunderstorms. So I was like, oh, that absolutely happened on this trip. So what is it? Yeah, that's exactly how it was. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And you can't pull
And
it apart. It's just we all of us have our own pains and our own rhythms, and it cannot truly be separated, but it might be easier to handle for us as small little humans, right? To just give it little places to exist and not, hold all of it up at once.
I think that's right. And I think that what you and I are doing right here together right now by just naming and acknowledging that that is a layer of our human existence and experience these days. I think especially in hyper individualized cultures like the US, which you and I are both sitting in right now, there can be a bit of a blind spot sometimes, a cultural blind spot that we are part of collectives. We are part of collective bodies, whether it's our family system, our community, society at large. And again, these days where we have, a computer in our back pocket or on our wrist, we are so much closer to what's happening on the other side of the world, what's happening to our atmosphere and ecosystems than ever. Every generation has been up against challenges and crises, but we are definitely the first ones to have such a front row seat to it all. And there's a real need to just start by acknowledging that and then taking steps to figure out what that means for us and how to work with it in constructive ways that are actually life-giving, right? That can actually be generative and
Yes.
actually help us be the people that we're feeling called to be these days.
I loved talking with you when we first met about how nourishing it can be when you find something that's tangible in your own personal lived space and life that makes you feel like you are contributing to the care of the world or your own community. Particularly because, like you said, we have a front row seat to every bad thing that's happening anywhere on the planet constantly. It is always in the feed. No matter where you look, someone's going to parrot it back to you or tell you. And then there's the scariness of some of it's made up and we're not even sure what we're consuming anymore. So there's so much fear and doubt on top of what we already are anxious about that we do see playing out in our own lives. And I remember feeling like the most nourishing thing that I could do is be in my yard, do something with my hands, create a garden, share seeds with neighbors, and then contribute to the food bank that's down the hill from me. And to think of that and go, I'm actually helping some people, not the whole world, but what I can physically, personally do here. And I'm getting to know real people. And I'm in those moments pulled out of the feed in a way where just for those hours, what I'm doing matters to somebody right in front of my face. And I needed that so much. I didn't realize how much that was kind of missing, or there was this big hole there, because it seems like in my own life, there's always a newsletter, sign this petition, call your governor, do whatever. And that felt like I get no feedback on that. I have no idea if I'm screaming into the void or not. But if I'm putting food in a box and giving it to someone who needs it, I know I'm doing something helpful. And I personally needed that.
That's so
Yeah.
beautiful. And it what I also heard in it is that it was something natural and easeful and life-giving to you. I think
Yes.
so often social change work in a traditional sense, and even it's something I'm reflecting a lot on what it is to be a giver these days, and which I do think is just a natural orientation that some of us are born with, and how to really actualize that gift, how to get really super skilled at it, because the world just desperately needs, and we look at me, that the giver in me was just like immediately other orienting, right? I put the world just at the center, and so anyways,
I really want to get into that in a minute because I'm doing the same thing. And I find it almost destructive at a certain point where I'm like, why do I have to give everything about myself away?
No, right?
Yeah, that's too much.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so instead, what I heard, and I think that that is just creates an uphill battle when it comes to thinking about changing the world or being of service, right? It's such an, ugh, like I just feel it actually being pulled from the center of my chest right now. Where what I heard you describe is you're like, I was in my yard. I was in a peaceful, beautiful place that feels so generative and life-giving to me. And then there's, just like a natural energy towards then connecting that to your local food bank. And I would even actually say that even just creating that space of living your values, right? Of being in nature, of growing your own food, whatever that looks like for each and every one of us, is the work too, right? It is ways that
Think
we
we
are
have such
co-creating culture and embodying the values that we want to see more of in this world.
absolutely. What I want to say too is that it's important that we recognize that it doesn't have to be huge to have impact. And I think I've come up against that so much, thinking everything I do needs to be bigger, and I need to shout it to the rooftops, and it needs to, like, 1,000 people need to see it, 1 million people need to see it. Like, I need to help everyone. And at the very beginning of any journey like that, it can just feel so crushing to be like, I am a speck in the wind. Nobody knows I exist. I'm working really hard. It could be the greatest thing that I've ever created, but if nobody sees it, it just feels like it doesn't matter. And I want to speak to the reality of, like, the internet, I guess, as it is right now, where all of us seem to be like, if you don't have a digital presence, if you're not out there spreading your word, no one ever will see it. And I'm really battling that personally right now and going, is that even really true? I'm living as though that's true. I'm feeling as though that's true. I'm reacting as though that's true. And yet, when it comes down to it, the people in my life that matter are people that, like, I'm seeing you face to face through a screen, but I'm talking to you. I have my neighbors that are hanging out with me and my daughter, and we're, like, exchanging flowers and talking about life and just hanging out with each other. Those things are more real. And in that environment, everything I do matters. Like, if
Yeah.
I'm out talking to the ravens and I'm talking to, like, the little tailless fox that comes through, like, there's a relationship there that I have that feels very good and natural and fine. And it's only when I think that it needs to be seen, witnessed, discovered, and somehow turned into a profit
Right, right,
by
right.
society. And I feel like that's the message I keep getting. Is everything we do needs to somehow be on a social media feed, inspire somebody else. And it just feels really exhausting. And I don't know if you found that with the people you work with too, that we're all just exhausted from feeling like we have to show up as superheroes every moment of our lives
Right.
and show off constantly. It's exhausting.
Right. It's so exhausting. Yeah. And it's such a hallmark feature of modernity these days, or post-modernity, whatever you want to think about these times as being. Yeah, absolutely. And just listening to you, I could just feel shifts in my body as I was relating to what you were saying. This idea that everything we do is a means to an end instead of just an end in and of itself. And even this idea, I know it's shown up for me as being like, oh, I feel it sometimes with pictures. Like if I go and do something, if I don't take a photo of it, I'm like, did that even exist? I'm like, I'm going
Did it even happen if I haven't recorded it on my phone? And
to
oh my gosh, okay, I'm gonna get really personal here. With my brother's death, looking back, I felt like I wanted to have every photo that we ever took. And I remembered me thinking in moments when I had hung out with him, because he lived 12 hours away, so I didn't see him all the time. When he'd come up to visit, sometimes I would not take photos, and I would consciously think, like, just be present with him. Like, you don't need to record every moment for it to have existed. And then finding after he died, I'm like, I wish I had a photo to prove that we were hanging out. And then I'm simultaneously remembering, I'm like, there was an entire, like, decades of my life where I didn't have, like, a camera in my pocket constantly, where I never would have thought to have to document, like, the food we ate and the place we went and whatever. So I'm like, that's not necessary. It didn't actually need to happen. But it is uniquely modern to have that sudden regret to look back at your phone and be like, why don't I have all the photos?
Yeah.
I also want to say, like, it didn't take anything away from my relationship with him to not have a photo of everything. I still, like, it didn't take away my memories. It
Yeah.
was just like one of those grasping things that I think that we do. And it's just interesting how much life has become a performance. And we think a lot about how we would present it or look back on it as though we just don't have, maybe it's like we're being trained to lose our trust in our own senses and our own memory and our own ability to create a life that's meaningful if it isn't left in a box for someone somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly it. And then what it made me think of is within the social change space, social justice space, within this really exciting time that we live in where more of us are feeling called to or politically activated in some kind of way. And again, it looks so different for each and every one of us. I did something that I do through my work and that has been such a source of learning for me is offering circle space that uses meditation and storytelling and an embodied empathy practice to support people to process changes within themselves, changes going on in the world. And it really is about what you just described there, regaining trust and connection with one's own sense and sensibilities, and even learning how to sit in the questions that don't have clear-cut answers in this world and in these times that we live in. And in particular, it made me think about, I did a circle series in 2021 around racial justice and anti-racism, specifically for white women, women in white bodies. And I had one woman at the end of it, she came up to me and she was like, I wanted you to tell me what to do, but I found something so much deeper.
That's awesome.
And that, right? That kind of like, we want to be told what to do because we don't want to mess up. We want to be on the right side of history. We want to know that, you know what I mean? We're like a good guy, or we're right, which all kind of ties into very normal and beautiful intentions, right? I don't want to knock that, but also it's tied to this performance piece. It's tied to also giving away our power to others or not trusting our own ability, which again, you know, within any kind of learning process, within any kind of self-development journey, just in journeys in general, there is always a time and place to talk less, listen more, to turn to others who have been walking longer than us for advice and guidance and all this other stuff. And then there is also a time that I think is less carved out or less named in our culture and society for, because I think this is also just a product of our culture, is it's a lot of consumption, right? We take things in, but we don't have opportunities to actually process and make sense of it and allow our own intelligences of our bodies and of our intuitions, our minds, our heart to reveal things to us that we can then bring into our lives and just experiment, right? Practice, play, let it be just kind of this iterative, ongoing dance.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love everything you just said. I feel like so much of our lives, like you said, has become consuming. And on the other side of it, we feel like we need to produce something constantly. So we're always in my understanding of how my own personal cycles work, it feels like we're in continuous spring. The society just wants us always to be producing, taking it in, producing, taking it in. And there's no time for digestion. And maybe there's time for summer to just like steamroll and do a lot of stuff.
Right.
As we are meant to, we should have time to just sit and be, to have our own thoughts. And because we're so unused to having that time or space, most of us freak out. Like I see it in my daughter, she just turned 10, and I see it in myself too, where whenever I have a question, concern, an uncomfortable feeling, my instinct is to want to go look it up immediately online, because that's what we do now, and go like, is this normal? How should I be feeling? How can I fix it or make it better? And I've really, really been wanting to turn more inward and go, I can answer that for myself. I don't need a robot, an AI, to tell me what the collective wisdom and recycled garbage of humanity says this is, because who cares about that? It's not me.
Right.
It doesn't know what's going on. And even asking other people in my life to answer that question feels like I'm just racing through very quickly and being unwilling to just experience discomfort, to experience that not knowing. And as you said, when people are allowed to be with it and no one gives them that straight up answer, do this, be that, think this way about it, it turns out we do have a feeling about it and our bodies have that wisdom. And it's actually really comforting to turn into that. And I think that's something that both of our philosophies really share, is that we ourselves in our bodies, in our lived experiences, have so much wisdom. And it really just takes some quiet, and it's always there. And it's okay to trust it. It doesn't have to feel amazing. I think that's like a big message for me, is everything doesn't have to feel wonderful to have value. And we probably will not always feel terrible. And that's something I definitely have been riding these last few years, is I've had a lot of moments of feeling terrible. It doesn't last forever. There's always going to be a wave, and there's going to be really wonderful, blissful, excellent moments too. So you can trust that things change, and you're never going to be caught forever in a terrible moment. And I want people to recognize that in themselves too, because I think, like you said, there's so much collective pain going on. When we touch it, it's so scary. It feels like it could last forever, or we're responsible for everything. But we're actually only responsible for the part that we're feeling right now. And we don't even have to fix it. We just have to live.
We just have to live. And I think another place that I have gotten stuck, that I've seen others get stuck too, is thinking that we have to process it all on our own or hold it all on our own. It really makes me think about the water droplet metaphor and the grief that you brought up in the beginning, personal grief, collective grief. And what I've also found, and again, you know, we can process and work with what we're feeling and the experiences in the world and our own lives in all sorts of different ways. But what I found particularly powerful is these group spaces, these circle spaces, these community spaces, where things that just are too much and too heavy to hold on our own actually has more of a container to be held. And, you know, these collective issues need collective containers. And what's cool too is that, you know, I've had experiences where I've come into circle and I'm feeling really frazzled, right? I'm just feeling frazzled and frenetic by the state of things, kind of in like a wired up, you know, confusion state. And I'll come into the space and hear a story from someone across from me that is just filled with grief, right? It's down in the lower pit, in the lower heart of her body. And it brings me into that part of myself and helps me touch into something that I didn't even know that I needed to touch into, right? And actually helps that move, even though, you know, her story is about living on the Pacific coast and she's, you know, 20 years my age. It doesn't matter, because in this circle space, in particular, it's about listening below the surface of what the person's saying and really attuning to that more emotional resonance, that emotional energy, which is our shared humanity, right? The part of our shared humanity. And so there's such a cool experience that can happen in these group settings where, yeah, there's like a contagion effect of emotions, but because we're using these healing centered tools, we're using these somatic and relational tools to actually support that energy to move within ourselves and between ourselves, there's a really cool flow that happens and a really cool, you know, like I didn't have to carry all the grief, but then we ended up carrying and moving the grief together. And there's something quite beautiful about that.
I think something that you're tapping into there is how we're such relational beings as humans. Like, we do need a group. We need a place where we feel like we belong. And I think sometimes part of our collective grief is feeling like we don't have a community to rest in. We don't have anywhere to share these feelings and experiences. And automatically when we do, there is this resonance and we find that things are meant to move, and they do it all on their own just by us being together and being able to have that like ebb and flow. I don't even want to say push and pull. It's like kind of like being in an ocean together, and everybody is experiencing, like you said, the same up and down in waves. We all have it in our own bodies. We feel it somewhat similarly, but it doesn't have to have the exact same personal impact. We're all in our own spot floating in this ocean, but we're all together. I love that. It's something that I explore in my seasonal gatherings as well, where we get together and we're feeling what is the energy that we're all personally experiencing through this season. And we bring in the wisdom of, well, what's going on in nature? What are we actually meant to be doing right now? But again, it's not providing, here's your answer and your solution to it. It's saying, here's some lenses to look at it with and to hold it together. And as we share what's going on, suddenly, like, you have your own clarity about what needs to happen next. Or suddenly you find that you're given that permission to feel or make the choice you already wanted to make anyway. And isn't it so interesting? I think when we're in community spaces, no matter who I'm talking to, even one to one, as you bring something up in your heart, you already know what you want your answer to be, and you're looking for someone to echo it back to you.
Yeah,
And I think that's
absolutely.
part of being human. So we want to be in these spaces. We want that confirmation. And when you're with a bunch of like-minded people or they're in that resonance together, you are getting that nourishment that you need. You're getting the permission to be able to drop whatever weight you were carrying, even if it's only for that moment. And then suddenly you realize, oh, this is possible. It's a thing that can happen. I don't need to do it all by myself. I don't have to carry this forever. It changes things very deeply, I think, for people together
Yeah,
like this. Yeah.
I think so too. And I think some of the key ingredients that I found for that too, because it brings me to the question of, okay, what makes, because we've all been in group settings too, where that doesn't happen,
That's
right?
true.
Like, not right. Like, whether it's a dinner party or a work meeting or whatever it is, right? And it makes me think of key ingredients around safety. It makes me think about, at least these, again, just in my own humble experience that I found, it's made me think about, and in particular, and safety can be such a loaded word, but really, you know, what types of things do we know from the healing-centered sciences around how emotions work and the mind and body really can make a space as constructive and supportive to as many as possible, et cetera. And then the other one that I think about a lot, especially when it comes to processing changes in the world and collective grief, and like you brought up early on too, just this, you know, age of disinformation and this kind of post-truth era where all of us are having so many different experiences. There are, you know, we're tapped into different echo chambers of conversations, et cetera, et cetera. How can we actually create spaces that can hold also divergence and diversity of thought? And because I can also find that sometimes healing spaces, community spaces can get the rep of being like, oh, if we're not all, you know, harmonious, if we're not all agreeing with each other, then somehow we failed, or somehow, you know, things didn't go well. I don't know if you found this too, but in this, yeah, go
Yeah.
ahead. Yeah.
No, it's okay. It's so hard, I think, if you have people at cross purposes. I think one of the ways that I find things go better is to be very clear about what the gathering is or what it's for, so that we're clear about what's expected of everyone, maybe. Because I think if people come in and one person wants to get one thing and someone else wants something else and they're very opposite of each other, then you find that there's conflict between people. But if it's apparent from the beginning, we're not trying to fix each other, we're not trying to change anybody's opinions about anything, and it's just stated up front, like all of your experiences are valid, and it's okay if you disagree with people. And I honestly expect it a lot of the time. Like, we live in a huge world and we all are living a different experience. There's no way that if you have 100 or 1,000 people, they're all going to have the same experience or be coming from the same society even, right? Like, we just have such a different cultural expectations. What I try to remember or hold in my heart, and I think that's something that's so important to big gatherings, is like, what's the heart intention, I guess, of the meeting, is that we're all here because we want relief, right? Like, we're here to find a common ground or to be able to share what we're feeling. And that means nothing that someone shares is wrong. It's just about having the space to say, this is how I feel. And I think it also is important that the leader of the space is able to step in and say, like, okay, what you're experiencing is valid and what this other person is experiencing is valid. But the point here is not for us to argue about it. It's to just meet each other as human beings and go, okay, if we strip away the actual context of what's happening and just hear, this is a person who's hurting. This is a person who's hurting. Now, how do you feel about each other?
Yes.
If this is what you're experiencing, how would you help that person or support that person? Take away context. Like if it was a little kid and they just said, my tummy hurts, what would you do? And suddenly there is so much common ground because we're all sharing the experience of being human.
Yes. Thank you so much for saying that in such a beautiful way, because that's exactly how I hold it too, right? Mm-hmm. Using, intentionality, using community guidelines, using relational and somatic tools within community spaces like that. Because I think when we're also talking about collective pain and collective wounds that are alive in society, it can really make feeling safe enough, or even being like, am I going to get kicked out if I say the wrong thing? Am I, you know, there's such a divisiveness that's in our world these days. And so I think it's when I talk about creating support and processing the world's pain, really naming how collective wounds related to the past, related to the present, related to the future can so often drive political narratives, drive even ideological takes. And what it sounds like happens in the community spaces that you offer, and what I've seen to be really important just in this spirit of collective healing and bringing more healing-centered support to just processing and making sense of what's going on in the world, is exactly it, dropping below the surface of the narrative and meeting people in that more human space.
I think we need to do that more, because I think that we're very used to hearing narratives and even interpreting our own lives the way that we've been shown. And it's to say someone's right and someone's wrong. Someone did this to someone else. Someone's a victim. We're all a victim right now. Like, I guess that's it. I don't even want to say that either, because that feels so disempowering. But what if we're all just experiencing what is some shitty stuff?
Yeah.
All of us.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if your ancestors did this and your ancestors did that. Like, there's so much guilt being flung in every direction and no one knows who's responsible for what anymore. And I think that's part of the grief too, is like, I want to take responsibility, but I can't take responsibility for all of it. Like, so much happened out of my control before I was born. It's happening around me. Like, I'm trying my best. Did you ever watch The Good Place?
Yeah.
And I loved the takeaway of like, it's so hard to be a good person at this point.
Yes.
Like, you just can't, because every decision you make has so much that went into it before you even knew it existed as a question to make a yes or no on, that there is no good choice anymore. And I think that's the freak out that we're all having, is like, well, how do we make it better if no matter what we choose, something bad has happened?
Yeah.
It's really tough.
Yeah.
So
it is really tough.
Making it known that we understand that it's like that for everybody, and that we're here in good spirit, here to support other people as fellow humans, and to just say, like, I'm here for you. I believe in your pain. I believe in your suffering.
Yes.
I believe in what's happening. I'm not going to say you're wrong for having it or you shouldn't have it because X, Y, or Z happened. Let's just get rid of that. Like, let's just look at each other with compassion and go, like, wow, we're all here living through some really tough shit.
That's right.
And it's in addition to just your regular everyday shit.
Yeah, it's in addition to your everyday regular shit. That's right.
Yeah.
You know,
and if you have that, you can have so much more compassion for yourself. And I think that's so important too, as you realize, like, I can be kind to everybody, but I have to be kind to myself first.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's always that pushing away and being angry at other people for also being upset and not helping you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a lot of trauma. It just makes me think, and like, trauma within the definition and sense of, you know, an experience happened in our lives, in the life of society, in a collective body, that was too much, too fast for the people in the body at that time to process, digest, and integrate. Right. So instead, it gets stored away, it gets exiled, it gets pushed to the side until there are the proper resources internally and externally for that to resurface, for that emotional energy, which, you know, turning to physics is just energy at the end of the day. It can't be created or destroyed. It needs to be experienced. It needs to be felt in order for it to be processed. And in some ways, when I look around these days and look at all of the collective pain and really sit back and wonder, like, why is it up in our faces in such an intense way? Sure, we can look at media. Sure, we can look at political breakdown. Sure, we can look at, you know, the rise and falls of civilizations, you know, like the cycles of civilizations, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also a curiosity I hold around this, like, trauma-informed and healing-centered lens of being like, maybe this is actually kind of, and bear with me for a second, but maybe it's kind of cool that so much collective pain is up in our faces these days. Maybe it actually points to us being resourced enough in a way. Enough of us have enough bandwidth, enough capacity, enough safety in our lives. And of course, not all of us. There's still much, much work to be done, but there is enough of us where, as a collective system, this stuff is coming to the surface. And now it's about equipping each other, supporting each other to work with it and actually transmute it and turn it into something adaptive and useful.
I love that. I think about this a lot myself, too, is wondering, okay, if I have the capacity to handle what I'm handling on whatever day, up and down, right? But generally, what is that allowing to be possible now? Because as you said, like, healing happens when everything comes to the surface, like the wound needs to flush itself out in order to heal. And if that's what we're all experiencing, like the experience of it is painful and it's gross and it sucks. And we don't want to have to scrub out a wound that's actively bleeding, right? It just sucks. And yet, as we do it, we have the opportunity to like set a bone and like move things back into a functional working space. So much of what I really believe in is living a more sustainable existence, like recognizing that we're all, like, we exist and we exist in an ecosystem. Like, we're not just one person alone in the world doing our own thing, even if like Western society seems to have told us all that we're individuals doing everything by ourselves. We're not that. We're actually touched to so many things, so many different moving parts. So realizing that as we find our own center, when we feel like we're capable of facing what we feel and feeling it, we're mirroring to everything around us that we touch, that it's safe to feel, that it's safe to be upset and it's not going to destroy anything, that sometimes you can use your upset to move something big, and that when you realize that we all have this much outrage, we're capable now of imagining something better. And that's why we're so angry, I think, is that we all have such better vision for what's going on with each other, with the planet, with the climate, with everything. And we're angry that it seems like the people in charge are doing nothing. Like, they're busy fighting about other things.
And
like,
they're doing the opposite.
Yeah. And then I go, is that actually true? Does that have to be true on the large scale? Because again, what I see in my personal community when I distill it down is people are showing up and making a difference and making choices. And when I do talk with people, like, we all want clean water and clean air. We would rather have better things. There has to be a shift at some point where all of us go, yeah, we're just not going to take that anymore from people. If you're going to say that you care more about destroying forests than, like, you know, getting rid of carbon, like whatever it is, then we say no to you and we're going to take back over, because all of us want something better for each other and for ourselves and for our kids.
Yeah.
So I think there's so much commonality there that isn't discussed enough. And I think it's important that people like you and movements like this are letting people hear that it is happening. We are making a difference, that we are showing up, that it isn't the only story in the world, what's on CNN or whatever, when you turn on Fox News. That's not the reality that a lot of people are living. That's one thing that you can tune into, but there's so much out there that you can, like, change your radio station and tune into the people who are making space to be human and reconnecting on, like, a more personal level and being mindful about what we buy and the food that we eat and making choices to, you know, work with local farms, and just small things, and it actually is enough. And we need to hear that more. I think people are thinking, like, no matter what they do, it isn't enough. I'm like, everything you do is great. Keep doing it. You're doing great.
Which comes back to that compassion piece that I heard you bring up earlier. Just really just such compassion for ourselves, compassion for each other, as we're all being pushed and pulled by the whims of these times that we live in. And then, you know, yeah, there is collective power that we have. And, you know, we can all feel very isolated. I know I can feel isolated within this world and within our own efforts. And it actually feels like it ties back to this kind of visibility thing. Like, oh, if I'm not showcasing it in some kind of way or being seen by, you know, somebody else, which again, there's a real need to be seen and witnessed is, you know, a valid thing, but, you know, just embodying the values that we want to see more of in the world does help to co-create culture. Like, culture change can seem like it is this, and systems change, right? It can feel so abstract, so far away, so out of reach, but really culture changes through us. It doesn't change around us, right? And it does change around us too, but, you know, culture changes through us.
I love it. This made me think of coming back from a trip, being gone for just 1 week. And most mornings I spend like the first half an hour to hour of my day with my garden. And I look at each little plant and see how it's doing. And I only started this garden this year, so everything started out very small. And it took me being away for a week to come back and go, oh, everything massively grew. But I felt like nothing was ever happening when I was here every single day. And I think culture change is like that as well, where we're living in it. It feels like we're doing so much effort. I'm watering these plants. Why is nothing changing? And part of it is just recognizing that when you're in it, you don't see how big the shift is because you're with it. You're a part of it. Things are changing around you all the time. Sometimes it really, oh, this is actually perfect for autumn, is realizing that you need to look back to see how far you've come. You need to have that moment to sit and reflect and go, well, wait, where was I at the beginning of the year or 5 or 10 years ago? And could I have made the decisions that I'm making today then? How much has gotten better? How many skills have I gained? How many people have I impacted in that time? And suddenly you realize, oh my God, it's massive. But living in it, it felt like I did nothing. Because right now, today, there's always like this emptiness of wanting more or more feedback from everything. And we just worry, like what is it? The watched pot never boils.
right. Yeah.
But things are changing. And I think of, you know, what was life like 100 years ago for my ancestors and stuff? And I'm like, well, women couldn't own a credit card or buy anything like on their own. They couldn't have a house. They couldn't own a business. And here I am, just as a matter of fact, I have my own business and I've done it multiple times. And 100 years ago, that would have been unheard of.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
There's massive changes happening, and they're always going to feel maybe less big than they actually are, or like it's still not enough. And I think that is, it's important that we always have desire. That's kind of what drives everything, right? Is this big existence experiment. What do we want to create? What's going to happen next? And it's really beautiful. So thank you for bringing that up, that you know, social change happens through us. And it doesn't feel like it's happening fast enough, but then it really can be remarkable how much actually is happening if we take a moment to really experience it and not just hear what we're being told everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And listening to what you were saying too made me think that I feel like one of the hallmark invitations of this time too is like building our capacity for complexity as well, because what I heard and everything that you were sharing is just this, and I even heard it in what you were describing around having really low seasons, having high seasons, feeling bliss, feeling dread, how, you know, there is this balance, and even again this like capacity that I feel like the times are asking us to cultivate within ourselves, of where we do hold the progress, we do hold the ways that some things do work in our world. Some things do work in our lives, right? With the sober reality that there is plenty that doesn't work. There's plenty that is either breaking down or maybe even falling apart, you know, and this itself is a capacity of emotions. This is a capacity of morality. This is a capacity of imagination to really, you know, bring in this kind of bigger picture view that we can hold in order to navigate what we see, navigate what we sense. I think it also even applies, going back to the conversation around the divisiveness of our times and even thinking about collective power and collective agency, like how do we actually move the dial at this more policy society level? You know, it is about people coming together. It is about finding those common interests. And it is, in my humble view, also about then doing this really beautiful and super challenging work of seeing beyond the narratives that we're all using to make sense of the world. That, you know, I'm thinking about family members right now who, you know, are very politically different from me. And there are some rabbit holes that they go down that are absolutely abhorrent to me. They're abhorrent, they're painful, they're beyond offensive, they're, you know, what could be called harmful. And although I'm not loving that word right now, but it, for me, it's been such a practice of learning how to stay connected, learning how to stay in relationship with people who have very different political views from me, in order to connect with my values, right? The values of connection, the values of relationships, the values of family, whatever it might be, and even my own values around what social change really needs. You know, in my view, in my own philosophy, social change needs us to be able to come together. It needs a big tent philosophy and approach. And so just that compassion piece, coming back to the collective trauma that's up in the air and how it can really breed such guilt, because we're all pointing fingers at each other, we're all turning, you know, because we're all just trying, in a lot of pain and trying to make sense of things, how to work with what we feel, right? Take care of and tend to the specific threads of pain that are present for each of us in order to get to a point where then we can start to have compassion and understand and see other people's pain, and not to excuse bad behavior or excuse actual harm or injustice or anything like that. By no means. It's actually even to get clearer on what are our hard yeses and nos, what are our boundaries when it comes to relationships, when it comes to even, you know, knowing when it's time to turn up the dial and like really kind of bring on mama bear energy versus, you know, be in the more kind of diplomat role, et cetera.
I love it. It's so interesting. I feel like in Tai Chi classes too, in Qigong, there's a lot that I've learned. They're saying discernment is so important, that you recognize that sometimes you need to just roll and turn away from something and it's not the time to engage, and other times it is the time to engage. And sometimes it's really easy to just like turn something into something else, but you need to be aware. And I think it all just comes back to like being present enough to be able to make that good discernment in the moment. So I say discernment because it's different from judgment. It's not judging that the other person's bad. It's not judging that this whole situation is whatever, but it's discerning like, for me, I need to do this now. And I think that comes back to, in my experience, it's really listening to my body awareness about what, like when a feeling comes up, I will feel it somewhere in my body. And I've learned to interpret things that way first before trying to label like, oh, I feel angry, I feel scared. I'll be like, oh, I feel like I want to walk away right now, or I feel like I want to punch something. I'm like, those give me a lot of information about what my spirit, I guess, is calling me to do in that moment.
Yeah.
And I think we all have that wisdom within us. And to a varying extent, people are aware or unaware of their emotions or their feelings or how that's playing out. And I think my work is so much about helping people connect with that and find their rhythm and learn what's true for them. I think so many people have accommodated a great deal. And I think that's what this time is calling for as well, right? The collective pain of realizing that we've all just gone with things a lot in our lives, or we've been taught that this is the way things are. And yet our emotions and our bodies are really calling to us, saying, not true. not true. What are we going to do that's
Nope.
different? Because it's not true. And it, we don't know what to do with it. And I think for all of us, like, I love that you hold circles, helping people be able to feel into it and not give them like, this is what you should do. It's just to say, well, what do you feel? And what wisdom do you have from your experience? Because that's where real connection, real change comes from. And it helps people find where do they have the most impact or feel that they most belong. And it's very different for each one of us. Like, I can hear in the way that you engage and speak, you're comfortable working with big groups of people and commanding a space and helping direct that. And it's interesting. I feel like on the podcast, I can talk really clearly and do this stuff, but in person, I'm so overwhelmed by crowds. I don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, like my actual engagement, I find, is so very focused and small, but that doesn't mean it's not powerful. And I
Oh,
think
yeah.
that I love meeting other people that resonate with that, where I feel like they want to do something. They feel like they wish it was bigger, and saying, hey, you have a huge impact, even if what you're doing is very like it's with your kid or with your partner or it's in your yard or just like in your job. You are affecting the people and the stuff around you always. And when you come to it feeling really solid and good about yourself, projecting that energy and not pretending anything. So I find like when I'm my most real, I can say, like I did at the beginning of this episode, I'm grieving, I'm sad. And then, you know, what are we, 20 minutes later, 40 minutes later, I'm not feeling that sad anymore. Like things move in waves. It's okay to show up like that and be authentic. When other people feel that way too, my goodness, we're capable of so much. We're capable of supporting each other so much because we're not pushing away any experience that anyone's having. And we're certainly not pushing away our own experience. And my God, that's healing. And I'm so tired of people pushing away their own experiences, thinking that it's not important or that no one cares, or like we have to care and give ourselves that permission.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I so appreciate the work you're doing and feeling such resonance with it, because, you know, there's a lot of great cultural progress we're making around emotions, but we're at the very beginning of it, right? To feel, to have emotions has been very taboo for very long, right? Very misunderstood. And what's so cool is we live at this time where the fields of clinical psychology and neuroscience are really helping us understand what emotions are, how they work in the mind and body, everything that you described there, right? That emotions are really just bundles of physiological sensations happening in the body, right? Because our nervous system isn't just in our brain, isn't just in our head. It's tied to our entire physicality, our entire body. And that emotions, evolutionarily speaking, this is the evolutionary perspective on emotions, aren't here to overwhelm us and to bring us down. They're here to help us adapt. They're here to help us survive at the very least, and then also to thrive in the best supported conditions. And so just what you were describing there, right? Living at this time when there's so much emotional energy in our collective nervous systems, there's so much that we're feeling from the state of the world. That's not here by accident, right? In my humble view, you know, it is here as an intelligence that we can tap into. It's here to get things to change and to move. And now we just need the right tools and support to be able to, you know, tap into those gifts and into those adaptive tendencies and really, you know, bring them into our lives.
I love that. I am so thankful to have met with you and been able to share your voice and your work with everyone today. I definitely would love to talk with you again, because I feel like this work is so relevant, important, and your view on everything so resonates with mine. And I love that.
I would love that. Yeah. And I equally have been really enjoying this, and I'm so always grateful to find people who are walking similar paths. And, you know, that's also right, the power of coming together as a collective, right? These kind of connecting of nodes and communities and all that good stuff. So I'm very grateful.
That is so awesome. Liz, I would love for you to just let people know where they can find you, and I will, of course, put that in the show notes as well.
Thank you. Yeah, people can find me through my website. It's wehealforall.com.
Wonderful. I am sending out so much love to you and to our listeners today and to the world, honestly. I think that as we speak about emotion more, as we meet each other and say, you know what, it's okay that you feel bad or scared or angry or sad. And it's equally okay if you feel great and inspired and like blissful right now. All of that, like you said, it's the complexity that we can hold both things. When we're able to just be with it, paths kind of appear. And I do feel like maybe that's part of what we're living through right now in these times is just saying, hey, if you're willing to be present, if you're willing to feel, that's going to give you guidance and you'll know what to do next, or people will show up that will help you out and move things along. Don't be afraid of how you're feeling. And it's okay to share it with other people because I think we're all looking for that connection and that support with each other, and we can be that for each other. And I'm so grateful to have shared that with you today.
Me too. Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me this week. This podcast is one part of a larger seasonal ecosystem of support. Through the course and seasonal workshops, we move beyond ideas into sustained practical growth and rest cycles at a pace that your nervous system can truly integrate and trust. You can learn more at anchoredandalive.com whenever it feels right. Until next time, stay steady, and we'll meet here again next week.